Now, obviously, if you simply focus on these three links, the link that leads from ignorance to desire to birth, you've got implicitly a roadmap of how you can reverse the process. If what you want to do is stop rebirth, as Buddhists do in this traditional teaching, if you want to stop rebirth, then what you do is remove ignorance. Somehow chip away at that basic misconception that people have about the world, and as a result, diminish desire. Slowly let some of those desires begin to slip away, and as a result of that, the process of birth will begin to unravel. It may not happen quickly. It may not even happen in this lifetime. In fact, very likely, according to this traditional view, it won't happen in this lifetime, but you can at least begin to set the process moving in a more positive direction. And if you do that, eventually what happens is you become... you find yourself on the path to nirvana. It's nirvana that is the third noble truth, the definitive cessation of suffering. The Pali word for nirvana is one that I've already mentioned to you. It's nibbana. Now, what do we mean then by nirvana? What is this concept? It's talked about a lot, you know. It really is a part of our vocabulary in this country. You can speak about all sorts of things as being like nirvana. And generally, they're quite positive, quite pleasurable. What would it be? I went down to Fenway Park the other day, and I saw Nomar Garciaparra hit a Grand Slam home run. And boy, for a moment, I felt like I was in nirvana. Turned out I was only in Fenway Park, but I felt like I was in nirvana, something exquisitely pleasurable. That's, I suspect, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I suspect that that's the popular view of this idea of nirvana. Truth is, of course, it's not positive in quite that obvious a way. Actually, if you think about the meaning of the word, the etymology of the word itself, it's quite a negative concept. Nirvana means literally to blow out, to extinguish the flame of a candle. So nirvana, you might say, is cessation. It's extinction in the sense of the extinguishing of a fire that burns constantly from one life to the next. And it's important to realize, I think, I'm convinced of this, to realize at the very beginning, when you think about nirvana, that it is a hard image, and in many respects, quite a cold image. So the comparison that I use when I talk to students about this comes from an experience that I had actually, I guess now, quite a while ago, when I was visiting in Rome. During a spring vacation once, I went down to a great Roman church. On the Thursday night before Easter for the service of Tenebrae, where the lights inside the church were extinguished. I'd have to say that that experience, I can actually almost feel the hair stand up on the back of my neck now as I recall myself in that place. We were in this great dark church. It was nighttime. It was early in the spring, and there was a line of Italian choir boys walking out of the service when the service was over, and each one was carrying a big candle. And as they walked down the aisle, each one blew out the candle in turn, one after another. And when that last candle went out, bang, the church was plunged into darkness, and then everyone filed out of the church in silence. It was quiet. It was dark. It was deeply moving. That's not unlike nirvana. Nirvana is the extinction of the flame of desire, the flame of existence. So it is like that moment of extinguishing in the experience of that service. Now, for us to understand the technical concept, to dig more deeply into what's going on here, we have to understand that nirvana really comes at two moments in the Buddha's life. It comes first in the moment of his awakening, when he realizes, I suppose you'd have to say, that he's not laying any more fuel onto the fire. That's a first moment, you might say, of extinguishing. It's the first time when he realizes that the fire will eventually go out.